Session number 26552,
Real One. Mr. Les Kinnear, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Kinnear?
I was born on the 15th of November 1925 in Poulton, Wallasey.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background and, you know, your early life as a kid?
Yes, I was one of six children, five boys and one girl. The three eldest served in the forces during the war. That's John, who was in the Guards pre-war. He was in the Scots Guards pre-war. Ernie, who joined the Marines about 1940, being 42, and later transferred to the Royal Marine Commandos. He eventually finished up by rejoining after the war, and he rejoined the RAF regiment, in actual fact, at his old rank of colour sergeant, and he served until he was 55 years of age then, finishing up as a first class warrant officer. I was the third one. I was all for the Navy. I joined the Navy.
Well, obviously we're coming up. So tell us a bit about your life. What did your parents do for a living?
My father was a railway man. He served throughout the First World War. He was only a boy of 14 when he went. And he served throughout the First World War. I've got his discharge certificate over there, I'll show you. He was discharged medically unfit after the war. And he went onto the railway and he finished his working life with the railway. But he was called up in 1939 as he was on what was known as the supplementary reserve. Right. Before the war, in the 20s and 30s, things were very, very rough. Most people in our road didn't work. And they were just as well off, really, as my father, who worked as a railway man. And I can always remember my mother saying he'd had a rise to about 39 shillings a week, which wasn't a lot for six kids. There were no benefits, no such thing as help with the rent or food or anything at all, you know. So if you didn't pay your rent, you were evicted. No nonsense. So the first thing was, the rent had to be paid first. The second was food on the table. Anything left over was for clothes. And we were very, very grateful in our family for the police who had introduced this fund, and they issued clothing to those in need. And most of our streets were in need, and everybody went round looking the same with the jersey, the police pants, and the clothing that they gave us was excellent. It really was. And of course boots in those days, we didn't have shoes, boots. And such were the times that as soon as you came home from school, get those boots off and get them old pumps on, they're good enough to play out in. That's how difficult things
were. Was there a community spirit in Poulton, you said? Well, Wallasey, you know.
Oh, yeah. Nobody locked the doors. And if we came home and my mother or father weren't in, which my father was usually at work anyway, you went in the neighbours. Or vice versa, the neighbours came in ours and you just went in through the back door. Nobody locked the doors in those days.
Now, what about your school? What tell us a bit about your education.
I went to St. Albans Roman Catholic School in Liscard, because we were a Catholic family. And from there, at the age of 11, I passed the scholarship, as it was known in them days. And I went to New Brighton Central School, which was classed as a higher elementary school. And it really was an excellent school. All sorts of people went to that school later on.
How did you do at school? I mean, was anything, any lessons, subjects, not lessons, any subjects you particularly liked or were good at or bad at?
Yeah, I was very good at history, and I was very good at English. Geography, I didn't like at all, and I didn't like music, because they said it was tone deaf anyway. But sports, of course, yeah.
What sport?
football. But we never owned, I never owned a pair of football boots. We always had to borrow something or play in an old pair that you could find off somebody that had pass on to you, something like that. But we could never afford anything like that, anything special. I joined the Sea Scouts.
Tell us about, what did you do with the Sea Scouts? What sort of activities were organised by them?
Well, in the Sea Scouts, they taught us drill, a bit of drill, how to tie knots. They took us out into whalers, which belonged to the Eaglet. No, I'm sorry, the Airwell. That was prior, it was later the Eaglet. The Airwell, which was an old cruiser from the First World War, and that was the headquarters of the R&R in Wallasey Dock in those days. And we'd go out rowing in this whaler in the dock in the Great Flood, because there's a large expanse of water there, you know.
Enjoy it?
Oh, we certainly did, yeah. Oh, we loved to get in that boat and get out, you know.
Where were the Sea Scouts based? Did you have a hut or something? Or?
Yeah, this was based in Seacombe, above an old builder's yard.
And about how many of you were there?
As I recall, there'd be about 25 to 30 of us, I would think.
Quite a few.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And who was running it? I mean, who sort of led it, the leader?
What's his name?
Or was he an old sailor, if you see?
He'd been an old sailor, yeah. And in actual fact, he was supported by an ex-Navy man. I can't remember the name, it's Brammer.
So, how old were you when you left school? Would it be 14, or did you stay on?
I actually left school when I was still 13.
Now, how come?
Because I was born in 1925, and I wouldn't have been 14 till November 1939. The war broke out on the 3rd of September, so I was still 13.
Now, what do you remember of the outbreak of war? You know, because you're only a young lad, but did you hear the broadcast? What did you think when it, you know, when it happened?
Well, we'd already been evacuated.
When were you evacuated?
We were evacuated the day before war broke out.
So the Saturday,
it was either the 1st or the 2nd of September. I can't
believe. What do you remember of the evacuation? How did you first find out about it?
Well, we heard about this on the radio at lunchtime. That's all we had. I was home at lunchtime, or dinner time as we called it. And because my father was home, he was come home for his dinner, and they put the radio on for the news, because everything was more or less critical at that time. And we heard them announcing that all these different places were going to be evacuated, all the school children, and listed the towns, and Wallasey was one of them. Of course, I was thrilled to bits. We'd never had a holiday, never been away anywhere, you know, oh, made up.
So what did you take with you? How was it organised?
My mother made a little haversack for each of us out of, well, the sacking. It's like sackcloth. And she made a little haversack for each of us with our spare clothes in. And that's what we went away with. And, of course, with our gas mask. We all had, we'd all been issued with a gas mask. So you carried that with you. That's what you went away with. And we all met down at Poulton School in Wallasey, and from there we were marched to Liscarden Poulton Station, which is no longer there, and away we went, and we went to Heswell of all places, which isn't very far, and we were billeted, first of all, in this old church building, I think it was, until they sorted us out the next day and were allocated to various families. And I had to go, as I was the eldest at home, as I wasn't working, you see. Although I had been working as a morning lad, I must say that. From the age of 11, I'd been working as a morning boy.
I'll pop back to that.
Yeah.
So where were you billeted? Which family were you?
I couldn't remember the names of the family, because we only stayed there for less than a fortnight.
And how did they treat you?
They treated us fairly well, you know, but it wasn't what we'd been used to, and of course we had a...
In what way?
Well, you couldn't come in and go as and when you wanted. You couldn't play and do this and that and the other when you wanted it. You know, when you wanted to. For example, we bought a ping pong game. It was only about a shilling or something like that, but we weren't allowed to use it. We never used it there. So,
they fed you all right?
Oh, yeah. It was basic. Things were basic, but we were fed all right, yeah.
Now, and you were there when the war broke out. What do you remember of that then? That's what.
Well, we were told the next morning, was that on the 3rd of September, they says, oh, war's been declared. Everybody was spouting, you see, because everybody had the radio was on all day, those who had radios. And that's how we learned that war had been declared and that the first ship had been torpedoed, which was the Athenia.
And what did you think? I mean, you're only a kid, but what did you think?
Well, it was just war. We'll beat them. We were absolutely confident that we would beat the Germans. You know, they can't beat us. And, of course, there was troops everywhere, called up, some of them without arms, you know, drilling without arms, one thing or another, you know, and waste grounding. That was in Heswell, and we used to stand and watch the sergeant or the corporal, or whoever it was, drilling the men, shouting and bawling at them.
And what did you think of that?
Well, we didn't think much of it, you know, we thought, oh, he's a right tartar, that fella kind of thing, you know. But we weren't bothered because we weren't going to go in the army anyway. We were going in the navy. And so the next thing was, I phoned home, but we didn't have a phone, so I phoned the place I used to work, and where my next elder brother, Ernie, he was still working there. And they passed a message to him that we were very happy there, you know, as soon as we come home. Anyway, it was the phony war then. So I think it was only about a fortnight, if it was that. And we were told, yeah, you can come home. So we got the bus home. Myself and the baby who was there, Frank, he'd only be about four. That's what I was detailed up to look after him, you see. There were four of us evacuated. The next youngest to me was Joe, and then my sister, Mabel, and them two were billeted elsewhere. They weren't with us. Anyway, eventually the four of us came home.
Now, what you mentioned you'd been working part-time. What part-time work were you doing up to then?
First off, I started delivering papers, and we were only 11 years of age then, and it was illegal. And in them days, a policeman, if he saw you working any shape or form outside, he'd call you over and ask how old you were, because he always told me you were 12, you know, which was the legal age. And then eventually they decided that we all had to be licensed through the schools. So you applied for this license, and it was a big armband, big red and black armband, which you wore. And that was issued by the headmaster. It came to him for him to issue it to us, and he wasn't very pleased because he was rather snooty headmaster, the one we had, a fellow called Tomlinson. He was a lay preacher, as a matter of fact. And of course, I came from a working class background, and we couldn't afford the school uniform. You know, so we stuck out like a sore thumb with all those others with the full uniform. I think the most we could achieve was a cap and a pair of, what did they call me, stuck in, like little epaulettes or something like that, you stuck in your socks. You know.
So he did license you. He did sign the form.
Oh, no, he couldn't sign it. It was already done through the Education Authority.
Right.
And it came to him, but he had to... He was called up to his study and say, what the hell have I done now? No, because we were always in trouble. And he was up there and he threw his across, here's your licence. businesses that was to go to work with. But that was when I was 12. What was legal then?
And so you're working still as a... what work were you doing? Still.
Then I'd gone from papers to delivering milk. Milk, eggs, tomatoes, as a morning boy, you know. And we say morning boy. We used to go out in the morning. We had to be there for six at the latest. And they dropped us off about 20 to 9, and then we had to get to New Brighton in 20 minutes. We'd had no breakfast. And I always remember old Sam Spike saying, heavens, that dear, best be sharp this morning, else you'd be late. I was late nearly every morning with him. And then we, after school, we came straight from school back to do the bottling. And because we bottled the milk ourselves there, you know, in Beach Farm, Breck Road, Wallasey, no longer there. And so we worked from about 4 till about 6 in the evening, and all day Saturday and all day Sunday for the princely sum of 4 shillings a week, which is 20p.
Now, so you left school. What happened when you left school then? You left school.
Well, we were just evacuated, and I never went back. Now, when I came home, after being evacuated, of course everything was in chaos. And my father had been called up before the war, just a few days before the war, on the supplementary reserve. No money was coming through from the army. So my mother was left with no money. The only wage that was coming in was my next elder brother, who was on probably about that in that around about that time, being no more than 20 shillings, 25 shillings a week. And of course, I came home and started work straight away again.
On the milk round.
Back with the on the milk round, yeah. And of course, I was saying, well, might as well work all day, so we'd be able to work all day. But my mother had to go down to see before a board in the education authorities' offices to plead for me to be released because no money was coming through. She'd applied for what was known as public assistance in those days, the PAC, Public Assistance Committee, and she was told to get out. That this was how abrupt they were. Get out. Your husband's in the army, they're paying you. She said, they've not paid me, we can't get anything. And she'd even written to me, Dad, you know, to try and speed matters up. But things were so chaotic, wasn't it? But in the end, they gave my father compassionate leave to come home to try and sort things out.
So what work did you take up with? Back to the milk round.
So I stayed on the milk round, and I was... Where the head lad, we called him the head lad, was about 18. He'd been called up, so I took over from him. So we grew up pretty quick in those days, and of course we had the horse and float, you know, and used to drive the horses all round and delivering the milk. And in those days we used to have 2 deliveries of milk at least, and then in the summer there would be a buttermilk delivery in the evening.
Buttermilk,
yeah. But we made that. It was all made with sour milk. And people used to use it for making scones and things like that. Oh, there was a great demand for it because everything was so cheap. In those days, a pint of milk, in the summer, when the cows could go out to graze, it was threepence. The 1st of October... it went up to threepence halfpenny because the cows had to be brought in. And then the 1st of April, when they could start going out again, it would be reduced to threepence. And that's how steady it was. Threepence halfpenny, back to threepence.
And how long were you doing this for?
I did that until 1940-41. About 1941.
Now, so dropping back, what about the effects of war? Firstly, I mean, the air raid precautions, there's 2 things. Did you have a shelter tell us about that?
We had an Anderson's shelter in our back garden, which backed onto the railway. And the road we lived in then, because we'd moved from Poulton to, well, it was the outskirts of Poulton and the beginning of Somerville. It wasn't far away.
Still Wallasey, though.
But it's still Wallasey. But we'd moved near it again to the docks. So we were the first line of houses up from the docks at the Birkenhead.
Now, what was your Anderson shelter like here? Because people don't know what they're like now, and there's not many about. Who put it in, firstly, and what was it like to, when you're in it? You know, who actually installed it, though?
Oh, the council. The council, well, I suppose it was contractors for the council, but it was through them. They were put in, and of course it was like large corrugated igloo, if you like, with a small entrance, and it was half sunk in the garden. The garden was excavated to a couple of feet and sunk into that, and the rest on top, and then you piled earth and sods and grass, anything, whatever you could, over the top of it, you see.
Did you do that bit, or did they do it?
Oh, no, we did that. They just put the thing in. Other shelters were people who didn't have a garden. You know, a lot of terraced houses didn't have gardens, only a backyard. Well, they'd have a street shelter built in the middle of the street, because you didn't have the traffic then, you've got no, you know.
Now, what was it like in the Anderson shelter when you actually were in it?
Well, it was usually very damp.
I was going to ask, was
cold. And of course, they were prone to flooding when you got heavy rain, you know. They thought you'd say, oh, have to bail that out. But of course, we used to get in it when the raids came on.
Now, what about the blackout? What effect did that have you on your milk round? In the morning, for instance, I mean, when it was pitch dark. What was the blackout like, firstly, in your house? How did you keep, what system of keeping the light in did you use?
Well, times were so tough in any case, we usually only had electric light downstairs. Those houses did have electric light, and they were shilling meters. And of course, a shilling was a lot of money in those days. And if you were going out, your mother'd shout, "Don't slam that door," because the needle would flicker. It was getting close to expiring. And if the needle flickered as you slammed the door, the needle would jump over, and immediately the lights would go off, and that was your lot. So that was that. But, well, you used anything at all, old blankets, if you could afford to, you know, anything at all, any old material to make blackout curtains.
And what was it like when you were actually on the milk round? Because no light, no street lights, I presume.
Well, everything was pitch black. You know, what few cars there were, they had most of the headlights, which were usually only a 6-volt system anyway, very weak, and they had most of the headlights blanked out with just a little thin beam of light to go through, you know, because if anything happened, the lights had to go out. And you were warned, no smoking in the streets if there was an air raid on, because they could see the glow of the cigarette for miles, so they reckoned.
So was it difficult going and getting about in the dark, or were you...
Oh, it was, but eventually you got that used to it, you know, that your eyes became accustomed to the darkness.
Now, what about the air raids? What do you remember of them as far as you're concerned, the German air raids on Merseyside, well, on Birkenhead and Poulton?
Oh, well, it was just horrendous, wasn't it? And see, when they talk about the Blitz on Liverpool, where we were situated, we were only about 2 miles from the city centre of Liverpool, 3 miles perhaps. And especially, they were after the docks. And they were after the docks shipping in the river. Well, Wallasey is on the banks of the Mersey. And of course, we had the great float, Birkenhead, all the Birkenhead docks, which were full of shipping. And of course, they sunk a few ships in the docks. The bombs dropping up and down our streets and around the vicinity, you know, and incendiaries. And of course, we all used to go around with filling pails of sand up and one thing or another, anything at all, buckets of sand to keep handy, you know, buckets of water. Stirrup pumps, people had stirrup pumps.
And what, I mean, what do you remember of the bombs that hit your street? I mean, can you remember much about it?
Oh, yeah. The ground just seems to come up and hit you. You're lying there trying to go to sleep. And, bump. And we had that. And, of course, we had the mobile anti-aircraft guns. They were mounted on backs of lorries, and they'd be up and down our street, kind of, all around the vicinity. And they'd be firing away, and, of course, there was a hell of a bang from them. And, of course, you had shrapnel raining down all the time, you know, from the exploding shells.
Now, some people used to just stay indoors, but did you go to the Anderson? I mean...
Oh, we went in the Anderson shelter, yeah.
It was too hot for anything else?
Because we were so close to the docks, you see. I say, we're only a matter of a couple hundred yards from the nearest ships.
And how near were the nearest bombs to you? I mean, was it a long street? I mean, you know...
Oh, it was a long road, yeah, but we had... Within a couple of hundred yards, that's about all, you know.
And did the bomb damage disrupt you round in the morning? You know, I mean, well, bombs across the street, houses across the street, that sort of thing.
Well, eventually, you'd be going round, and, for example, just within 500 yards of the dairy where we worked, there was a little row of terraced houses called Breck Place, which was just up from Bidston Dock. And we used to deliver milk down there, a little narrow passageway down, and in front of it, instead of garden, they had allotments. And because we're delivering milk down there, we finished school right down Wallasey, come back. And there's a policeman there, where the hell do you think you're going? Going back to the dairy. We can't go here. There's all unexploded bombs there. That's what we did. We built there this morning. And that's the sort of thing you're contending with. And you've been coming to different roads to go and deliver milk to customers, and the houses were no longer there. And you'd see bodies sticking out from under the debris and all sorts of things like that, you know. Houses on fires, houses demolished, glass everywhere. Debris everywhere.
Did it make you nervous? I mean, you're only a young lad. I mean,
no, we got used to it. We were more concerned for the horse. At first, when the air raid warning went and we're going out and during the day, I said, oh, take the horse out, and where can we get him in shelter? And I always remember one chap had a garage which was open, and it opened onto the pavement. I thought there was nobody there. I'll take it in there. Anyway, after about half an hour, I don't think it was that, but quarter of an hour, 20 hours, so to hell with this. So, back the horse into the shafts, saddled up again, and away we went. To complete the round, you know. I said, where the hell have you been, lad?